Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're going deep on a topic that might be totally new to you. Alexithymia.
Alexithymia.
Yeah. Have you ever felt like completely stumped when someone asks, how are you feeling?
Or like, you know you're feeling something.
Right.
But you just can't like put it into words.
Exactly.
That's kind of the territory we're going to be exploring today.
That's alexithymia in a nutshell.
Yeah. It's not a like official diagnosis. It's more of a personality trait. Describes having trouble identifying and expressing emotions.
And we've got this really interesting Danish article that's going to help us unpack all of this.
Cool.
It's all about alexithymia and couples therapy. Don't worry, we'll translate all the juicy bits for you.
Good, because...
But get this, could our childhood experiences actually shape whether or not we develop alexithymia? And what does all of this mean for our relationships?
Big questions.
Big questions. So let's dive in.
Okay, so first things first, alexithymia is way more complex than just, you know, not having the right words for your feelings.
Right. The article really emphasizes that point, doesn't it?
Yeah, like someone with alexithymia, they might know the words.
Right.
But they struggle to connect those words to what's actually going on inside them.
So it's not just a vocabulary issue.
No, not at all.
It's about making that connection, right? Like between the feeling itself and the word for it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know the ingredients for a cake.
Okay.
But you don't have the recipe, you know?
That is such a good analogy. And sometimes, you know, I even find myself struggling to pinpoint exactly what I'm feeling. Is that a sign of alexithymia, potentially?
Well, I mean, we all have those moments sometimes, right? Where we're not sure how to describe what we're feeling.
Right.
But with alexithymia, it's like a much more consistent thing.
Okay, so it's like a pattern almost.
Yeah, it's a pattern. It's pervasive.
Got it. So before we go any further, can we just do a quick recap on how emotions actually work in the brain? I think that might be helpful for some of our listeners.
Sure. Think about it like this. Okay. Remember those scenes in 3D movies where it feels like you're about to fall from a really high place?
Oh, yes.
Even though you're safely sitting in your seat, you might still feel that like lurch in your stomach.
Oh, I hate that feeling.
Right. But that's because your brain's taking in the sensory information. In this case, what you're seeing.
Okay.
Interpreting it and then triggering this physical response.
So even though logically, we know we're not in any real danger.
Right.
Our brains are still creating this emotional and even physical response.
Exactly. And for someone with alexithymia, it might be even harder to connect that physical response, like that lurch in your stomach, to a specific emotion, like fear or anxiety.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So how does this all play out in relationships then? How does alexithymia affect communication, especially between couples?
Well, the article dives into that a lot,
okay,
especially in the context of, you know, couples therapy. But even without alexithymia, communication can be tough, right? We all see the world through our own lens.
It's like that optical illusion, you know, the one where you can see either an old woman or a young princess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Depending on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. Same image, but totally different perceptions.
Exactly. Now imagine, you know, trying to navigate an argument with your partner.
Oh.
When one or both of you are having trouble identifying or expressing your feelings clearly.
Oh, that sounds like a recipe for disaster.
It can lead to a lot of frustration, a lot of misunderstandings.
Yeah, definitely.
That's why it's so important for therapists to understand alexithymia.
Right.
So they can help couples develop like better communication strategies.
So it's not just an individual thing.
No.
It affects the whole dynamic.
It affects the whole relationship dynamic. Yeah. Now here's where it gets really interesting. The article starts exploring these kind of unexpected factors that might actually contribute to alexithymia.
I'm all ears. Hit me with these unexpected factors.
One of them is PTSD.
Wait, PTSD? Isn't that about trauma, not emotions?
It is, but think about it. After a traumatic event, people often develop these coping mechanisms where they shut down emotionally or they dissociate from their feelings.
So it's like a defense mechanism.
Exactly, yeah.
To protect themselves from feeling overwhelmed by those painful emotions.
Exactly. And over time, those patterns, those avoidance patterns, can lead to difficulty identifying and expressing emotions in general.
So trauma can actually impact someone's ability to just understand and communicate their feelings.
It's a complex relationship, but the research definitely suggests a connection.
Wow. I never would have put those two things together. Are there any other kind of surprising factors that the article talks about?
Yeah, well, it also mentions hormonal changes.
Okay.
You know how hormones can really affect your mood, your energy levels?
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it, especially during things like puberty or pregnancy.
Exactly right.
Right.
Well, those hormonal fluctuations can actually make it harder to process emotions clearly.
Wow. So it's like adding another layer of complexity.
Yeah.
To an already complex situation.
Yeah, totally. So much of what we perceive as personality could be influenced by biology, you know?
That's a great point, and one that scientists are still really trying to figure out.
Yeah, it's fascinating. But the takeaway is those biological influences can definitely impact our emotional experiences. Now, there's this other concept the article talks about called linguistic neglect, and I'm curious to get your take on this.
Linguistic neglect? I don't think I've ever heard that term before.
It's interesting. Think back to your childhood. Okay.
Okay.
Were you encouraged to talk about your feelings, or were certain emotions kind of off limits? Linguistic neglect basically describes growing up in an environment where emotional expression wasn't encouraged or validated.
So like if a child is expressing sadness,
right,
but their parents dismiss it or just ignore those feelings.
Exactly.
That would be a form of linguistic neglect.
That could be a form of it. Or if there are unspoken rules in the family,
right,
against talking about certain emotions.
I've never thought about it that way. So the article is suggesting that this lack of emotional language during childhood,
yeah,
could affect someone's ability to understand and communicate their feelings as an adult.
That's the idea.
Wow.
If a child doesn't have the tools, the vocabulary to express their emotions,
yeah,
those skills might not fully develop. It's like trying to build a house without the right materials.
Ooh, that's a powerful analogy.
Right. Makes you wonder how many people are walking around feeling emotionally stifled.
Yeah.
Because they never learned how to really articulate what's going on inside.
That is a sobering thought. And it kind of connects to another idea that we touched on earlier, that defense mechanism.
Which one?
Reaction formation, I think it was called.
Yeah, reaction formation.
Could that be a way of coping with those early experiences of linguistic neglect?
It's definitely possible. Remember, reaction formation is when someone behaves in a way that's the opposite of their true feelings.
So like someone who's secretly heartbroken might act super cheerful and carefree.
Exactly. And the article suggests that people who experienced linguistic neglect as kids might be more likely to develop this defense mechanism.
Interesting. Because they learned that expressing certain emotions just wasn't safe.
Yeah.
So they built up this habit of masking their true feelings.
It's like building a wall around your heart to protect yourself from getting hurt.
That makes sense. But that wall, while protective,
yeah,
could also create a barrier to intimacy, to real connection, right?
For sure. It highlights how important it is to recognize these defense mechanisms and address them, both in therapy and just in our own lives.
We need to create space for people to be emotionally honest.
Totally.
Both with themselves and with others.
I agree. It takes courage to be vulnerable, but it's essential for building real connection. And that brings us back to the power of language, something this article really emphasizes over and over.
It seems like language plays such a crucial role in all of this.
It does. Language is so much more than just words, right? It's this whole system of symbols, metaphors, cultural nuances that we use to make sense of our inner world and connect with others.
So is the article saying that people with alexithymia, they struggle with this abstract, nuanced aspect of language?
That's one of the key takeaways, yeah.
Interesting.
The article argues that people with alexithymia often find emotional language to be too, I don't know, multifaceted,
Rich.
Too abstract. They might prefer more concrete, literal expressions.
Which makes sense, because think about how we adjust our language depending on the context.
Right.
We speak differently at work than we do with our close friends.
Exactly. Now imagine having to constantly translate those subtle shifts in emotional language.
Yeah.
When you're already having trouble identifying your own feelings.
That sounds exhausting.
It can be really draining. That's why the article stresses, you know, patience and understanding when communicating with someone with alexithymia.
It's about meeting them where they are and finding those ways to bridge the communication gap.
Well said. Now this next part is where the article blew my mind.
Okay, lay it on me.
It introduces this concept called an endophasia.
An endophasia. Okay, I'm going to need you to break that down for me.
So essentially, it refers to the lack of an inner voice.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me some people don't have that constant chatter in their heads?
That's what the article suggests.
I can't even imagine.
It's pretty wild, right? And the article suggests that some cases of alexithymia might actually be more related to limitations in internal language processing than to emotional awareness itself.
Oh, so it's not that they're not feeling emotion.
Right.
It's that they might struggle to process and articulate those emotions internally.
Exactly. And that's where it gets really interesting. Think about how we use our inner voice to analyze situations, to reflect on our experiences, to make sense of relationships.
Yeah, it's like having this ongoing internal dialogue that helps us understand ourselves and the world around us.
Exactly. So if someone lacks that inner voice, it could impact their ability to do that kind of internal processing.
Right.
Which could then show up as difficulty identifying and expressing emotions externally.
This is fascinating. This is really challenging my assumptions about alexithymia.
Right. It really makes you think.
Yeah, it does. It makes you wonder how much of our understanding of emotions is tied to language itself.
That's the big question, isn't it?
It is. Okay, my brain is officially doing backflips. I think I need a moment to process all of this before we dive into the rest of this article.
Take your time. There's a lot to unpack here.
There is. But this is what we love about these deep dives, right?
Absolutely.
They push us to question our assumptions, to consider new perspectives.
That's the whole point.
And I'm already seeing alexithymia in a whole new light.
That's awesome. So what really stood out to you in this first part of our exploration?
You know, for me, it was the link between linguistic neglect and alexithymia. I never considered how much our childhood environment could shape our emotional vocabulary.
Yeah.
And just how comfortable we are expressing our feelings.
And that's a big one.
It is. What about you? What resonated most with you?
I think what's fascinating is how the article challenges our assumptions about what's considered normal when it comes to emotions.
Yeah.
Like the idea that some people might not have an inner voice, that's mind-blowing.
It is.
It really makes you question everything.
It does. It makes you wonder if we're even asking the right questions.
Right.
When we try to understand and diagnose alexithymia.
Exactly.
But I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's take a breath, and then we'll dive back into the rest of this article. There's still so much to uncover.
I'm ready for it.
Me too. Let's do it.
So picking up where we left off, the article talks a lot about the importance of language.
Right.
When it comes to understanding and managing emotions.
Yeah.
And this is especially relevant in couples therapy where communication is, you know, key.
Right. It makes me realize just how much we take language for granted. You know, we throw around words like happy, sad, or angry without really thinking about it.
Right.
But this article is making me consider how those words might land differently for someone with alexithymia.
That's a great point. The article emphasizes the different levels of language involved.
Okay.
It's not just about knowing the basic emotion words. It's also about understanding the kind of subtle nuances, the complexities of how we actually communicate our feelings.
It mentioned something about a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
Like from concrete to abstract language.
Exactly. So for someone with alexithymia, using language in factual, concrete situations might not be a problem.
Okay.
But when it comes to those more emotionally charged conversations.
Right. Which tend to come up a lot in relationships.
Exactly. That's where things can get tricky.
I can see that.
Okay.
It's not just about knowing the dictionary definition of a word like love.
Right.
It's about understanding all the different ways that word can be used, the shades of meaning it can carry.
Yeah.
Even the baggage it might hold based on past experiences.
Exactly. And the article really drives that point home.
Yeah.
Even people who are super articulate in, say, professional settings might find themselves struggling to express themselves effectively in their personal lives.
It's almost like having to learn a whole new language.
In a way, it is. It's like developing fluency in the language of emotions.
I like that.
And that involves not just words, you know, but also tone of voice, body language.
Right. All those nonverbal cues.
Exactly. All those subtle things.
Which brings us back to couples therapy.
Yeah.
And how alexithymia can contribute to conflict.
Right. Those miscommunications, those misunderstandings, they can build up over time.
Oh, yeah.
And lead to, you know, resentment, frustration.
Of course.
Imagine trying to work through a disagreement with your partner when you can't even articulate what you're feeling or why.
That would be so frustrating.
It's incredibly frustrating for both people involved.
Absolutely.
That's why the article stresses how important it is for therapists to really get alexithymia.
Right.
It's not about pointing fingers or placing blame.
Right. It's about understanding.
It's about recognizing those communication barriers and helping couples develop strategies to overcome them.
So what kind of strategies are we talking about? Does the article give any specific examples?
It doesn't go into specific therapeutic techniques.
Okay.
But it highlights the importance of patience, empathy, and a willingness to really, truly listen.
Yeah.
Even if it's not always clear what your partner's trying to say.
Right.
It's about being present.
Being present and trying to understand.
It's about reading between the lines.
Yeah.
Picking up on those nonverbal cues.
Exactly. It's about putting in the effort to learn your partner's emotional language.
Your own unique emotional language.
Exactly. Even if it's different from your own.
It's like building a bridge. A bridge of understanding.
Beautifully put. And remember that idea of linguistic neglect that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
The article suggests that this kind of childhood experience can further complicate things in relationships.
We touched on it briefly, but can we unpack that a little bit more? I'm still a bit fuzzy on what exactly linguistic neglect means.
Sure. It's basically a term the article uses to describe growing up in a home where expressing emotions just wasn't encouraged or validated.
Right.
Maybe parents dismissed their child's feelings or there were unspoken rules about certain emotions.
So it's not necessarily about outright abuse or neglect.
Right.
But more about this subtle lack of emotional attunement.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Within the family.
And the article proposes that this kind of environment can hinder a child's emotional development.
Wow.
Much like, you know, a lack of proper nutrition can stunt physical growth.
Wow, that's a powerful comparison.
Right. If a child isn't given the chance to practice identifying and expressing their feelings in a safe, supportive environment, those skills might not fully develop.
And that can carry over into adulthood.
Mm, absolutely. They might have a limited emotional vocabulary.
Okay.
Or feel uncomfortable talking about their feelings.
It makes you wonder how many cases of alexithymia could be linked back to this kind of, I don't know, subtle emotional neglect in childhood.
It's a question worth exploring for sure.
Yeah.
What's clear from the article is that those early childhood experiences,
they
really shape our emotional landscape.
They do.
And those early influences, they can stick with us, impacting our relationships, our well-being.
It also makes me think about that defense mechanism we were talking about earlier, reaction formation.
Oh, yeah.
Could that be a way of coping with those early experiences of linguistic neglect?
It's possible. Remember, reaction formation is about behaving in a way that's opposite to how you're really feeling.
Right. So like the classic example, someone who's secretly heartbroken but acts super cheerful.
Exactly. And the article suggests that people who experienced linguistic neglect as kids might be more likely to develop this defense mechanism.
It's like they learned that expressing certain emotions just wasn't acceptable or safe. So they learn to mask those feelings.
It's like building a wall around your heart to protect yourself from getting hurt.
Which makes sense, but that wall, while protective, could also create a barrier to intimacy and connection, right?
Absolutely. It highlights the importance of recognizing and addressing these defense mechanisms.
Yeah.
We have to create space for ourselves and others to be emotionally honest.
It takes courage to be vulnerable.
It does.
But ultimately, that vulnerability is what allows us to connect with others on a deeper level.
Couldn't agree more. And this brings us right back to the importance of language in emotional development.
The article just keeps circling back to that, doesn't it?
It really does. It argues that language is key to unlocking emotional awareness and fostering those deeper connections.
It's making me think about the power of words.
Yeah.
And how the way we use them, both internally and externally, can have such a profound impact on our emotional well-being.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If we don't have the words or the skills to express our emotions, it can lead to isolation, frustration, even difficulty regulating those emotions.
So are you saying we all need to become like more emotionally articulate?
I don't think it's about becoming walking dictionaries of emotions.
Okay.
But it is about developing a greater awareness of how we use language to express ourselves.
Right.
And connect with others.
So choosing our words carefully.
Yeah.
Paying attention to our tone of voice.
Exactly.
Being mindful of those nonverbal signals.
And being open to learning from others, especially those who communicate differently than we do.
Because we all have our own unique emotional languages, right?
Precisely. And the more fluent we become in those languages, the richer and more fulfilling our relationships can be. Now, remember how we were talking about anendophasia earlier?
Oh, yes. The lack of an inner voice.
Right. Well, the article takes that idea even further.
Okay.
And starts exploring the connection between language and what it calls mental representations.
Mental representations. Okay. We're getting deep here.
It gets pretty heady. Basically, mental representations are these internal models of the world.
Okay.
That our brains create to Right. help us make sense of our experiences.
So like mental maps that help us navigate through life.
That's a great way to put it. And these mental maps, they're constantly being updated, refined.
Right.
As we encounter new information, new experiences.
So where does language fit into all of this?
Well, the article argues that language plays a critical role in shaping those mental representations.
Okay.
Particularly when it comes to emotions. It suggests that for many people, their internal dialogue.
You mean that inner voice we were talking about?
Right, exactly. That inner voice is the main tool they use
okay.
to process and understand their feelings.
So, for example, let's say you have a conflict with your partner.
Right.
You might use your inner voice to kind of analyze the situation, consider different perspectives,
yeah.
understand your own emotions, as well as your partner's.
Exactly. And that internal processing can then inform how you communicate
right.
and how you behave externally.
But what happens if you don't have that inner voice or if your emotional vocabulary is limited?
Right, then that internal processing becomes so much harder.
It's like trying to solve a complex math problem without knowing the basic operations.
Exactly. So language shapes our thoughts shape our emotions, and our emotions shape our behavior.
It's all interconnected.
It is. Oh. And if there's a breakdown in that chain,
right.
whether it's due to alexithymia, anendophasia, linguistic neglect,
yeah.
it can have a ripple effect.
On everything.
On our relationships, our well-being,
right.
our ability to navigate the world effectively.
This deep dive is really driving home the importance of language.
It is, right.
In our emotional lives.
It really is. The article goes on to argue that we need a more, what it calls, interdisciplinary approach to understanding alexithymia.
What does that mean?
It means breaking down those silos between different fields of study. We need more collaboration between psychology, linguistics, communication studies, even neuroscience.
So we need a whole team of experts to tackle this puzzle.
Exactly. The more we can integrate those different perspectives, the better we'll be able to understand alexithymia
yeah.
and develop more effective ways to support people who experience it.
I'm really curious to hear more about the therapeutic approaches that the article mentions.
Okay, yeah.
Can we dive into that now?
Sure. The article highlights one therapy in particular
okay.
called dialectical behavior therapy, or DBT.
DBT, I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Isn't that usually used to treat borderline personality disorder?
It is, but the article argues that DBT can be beneficial for anyone struggling with alexithymia.
Interesting.
Regardless of whether they have a personality disorder diagnosis.
So what is it about DBT that makes it so effective for addressing alexithymia?
Well, DBT focuses on developing skills in four key areas.
Okay.
Mindfulness, emotional regulation, interpersonal effectiveness, and distress tolerance.
So all things that are really helpful when you're struggling to identify and manage your emotions.
Exactly. It helps people become more aware of their thoughts and feelings,
develop
healthier coping mechanisms
right.
for dealing with those intense emotions, improve their communication skills, and build stronger relationships.
Sounds like a very practical approach.
It is. And one technique in particular that the article highlights is called chain analysis.
Chain analysis.
Have you heard of that?
No, tell me more.
So chain analysis is basically about, it's crucial for making those positive changes.
Absolutely. This is also fascinating. Does the article talk about any specific challenges that therapists might face when working with someone with alexithymia?
It does. While the article praises DBT for its effectiveness,
yeah.
it also acknowledges that DBT doesn't specifically address those communication challenges
right.
that often come with alexithymia.
So it's missing a piece of the puzzle.
In a way, yeah. The article argues that to fully address alexithymia,
okay.
we need to combine those psychological insights of DBT
right.
with communication strategies and tools from fields like, you know, linguistics, speech therapy, relationship counseling.
So it's about creating a more comprehensive approach
yeah.
that tackles both the internal and external aspects of alexithymia.
It's about bridging those different disciplines.
This article is really pushing for greater collaboration.
It is. And I think that's so important. Alexithymia is often overlooked, misunderstood,
yeah.
but it can have a profound impact on people's lives.
Absolutely.
By raising awareness and promoting these more holistic approaches to treatment,
right.
we can help people experience greater emotional well-being
yeah.
and build more fulfilling relationships.
Well said. This deep dive has definitely opened my eyes to the complexities of alexithymia.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely going to be thinking about the role of language for a long time.
Me too. So where are we at with our key takeaways from this part of our discussion?
For me, it's the realization that even something as seemingly simple as language
Right.
can have such a profound impact on our emotional lives.
It's powerful.
It is. And that discussion of linguistic neglect, how it can affect emotional development, that was really eye-opening.
That's a big one.
It is. What about you? What stood out to you the most?
I was really struck by the idea that therapy can be such a powerful tool for developing what the article calls emotional literacy.
Emotional literacy, what's that?
It's basically the ability to understand, express, and regulate your emotions effectively.
Okay.
And the therapy room, it can be like a safe space
Yeah.
to expand your emotional vocabulary, practice identifying and articulating your feelings.
So therapy becomes like an emotional language lab.
I love that, yeah.
It's a space to really delve into those nuances of emotional language, challenge those assumptions,
yeah.
and find new ways of relating to yourself and others.
Exactly. And that can have such a ripple effect, you know? It goes beyond just the therapy room.
It affects everything.
It impacts relationships, work, overall well-being.
The article makes a really compelling case that by investing in emotional literacy,
Yeah.
we're not just addressing individual struggles, we're actually contributing to a more emotionally intelligent society.
That's a great point.
It's quite a thought.
It is, because when we're all better at understanding and communicating our emotions,
right.
we can create more compassionate relationships, more effective workplaces, more just and equitable communities.
So addressing alexithymia isn't just about helping individuals cope.
No.
It's about building a world that values and cultivates emotional intelligence.
So until our next deep dive, keep those minds open, those hearts curious, and those conversations flowing.